The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Inman Jr. is in the house. It is the question and answer show. Hey Jimmy.
Afternoon, sir. Nice to see you.
Good to see you too. I'm excited about today's show, especially because I have reviewed none of the questions. So therefore the answers will be completely unprepared and off the cuff. So that's going to be great. You know what? Today is Thursday, and I am thinking about D-Day. Mm-hmm. 80 years ago is when D-Day happened. Of course, D-Day is when our forces raged onto the beaches there in Normandy. And my grandpa, he was there on day two, but nearly 160,000 Allied troops landed in Normandy on June 6, 1944. That means these guys, if they were 18 years old, that means they're 98 now. If they were 20, which probably was more the average, that means they're 100 years old, so very few of them are still around. We had 73,000 of the 160 were from the United States, 83,000 were from Britain and Canada. Forces from several other countries were also involved, including some French troops. And they faced 50,000 German forces. So they basically said, we're going to outnumber you. And that's what they did. And it was that 6:30 a.m. sea landing that really changed the course of the war. And, of course, we can attribute to our freedoms today. And the reason I don't speak German, I don't speak French, I don't speak anything, I don't even speak English very well, so let alone these other. So thank you. Not just to the guys that served and gals back in World War II. Many of them aren't with us anymore. Both of my grandpas were in World War II. Both of them have been gone for a long time. Grandpa Hayes died in the early 80s, and so did my grandpa Burton, who was also a Bloomington firefighter for nearly 30 years. So thank you to all veterans, and thank you for all of those that have served. My great uncle Bob Stillions, he was in the Battle of the Bulge. He was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge. Incredible story. And you know what's interesting about that group of guys? They rarely talked about the war until they got really old. And then my father-in-law, Rodney, was in Korea. His brother, Jerry Joe, was killed in Korea a week before he was to come home. And they never really talked about the war until they got really old. And then the Vietnam guys, you know, they didn't want to talk about it. And until they're now in their 70s, do they talk about it? And when they talk about it, I think it's somewhat of a therapy session for them to get it out there and to talk about it. So when thank you. And here we are 80 years later, and I'm just glad that we're still remembering things like that. Jimmy?
I completely agree. On a different note, you had a big night on Monday night with the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame.
It was so much fun. We had the student-athletes were there from the area high schools. We gave away $6,000, but that's not the most important thing. That's just kind of a ancillary benefit to being a person that receives that honor. But they are forever enshrined, or will be after this year's banquet, on the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame website with their bio. And I was joking. I actually watched the Facebook Live event last night just to kind of see how it went. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know how cool it would have been had I, you know, now at 54 years old, if I could pull up that website and say, see, son, there I am, 1988 award winner. Here's my bio.
Well, I was looking for
pretty cool.
I was looking for Father's Day pictures to put on our Facebook page, and I found one that Ralph Haynes had put up of you, Tony Cassisia, and there were two other guys. I don't know if that was your senior year.
Probably was senior, because that was Ralph's first year, was my senior year.
Okay.
Yeah. Great memories there. But then the other cool thing is I'm not so sure we've had scholarship recipients that have reached such a high level of achievement. I mean, we have someone that's in the Olympic trials mm-hmm. right now. That's crazy.
Pretty amazing.
I mean, throwing the discus over. I mean, Rod was telling me the story about how most, you know, they were at a track meet or whatever, and the guys were measuring, you know, the other discus throwers, and they're standing there, and she slings it, Hadley did, and they took off running like a referee at an NBA game to try to track it down and measure it. So, yeah, it's crazy. So I'm you know, the rule is 30 years old, 10 years removed from your sport, either or, and you can be considered to be an inductee into this Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. And this was the very first year, being our 13th year, that a recipient of a scholarship would have been eligible via their age this year. And we didn't have any from that first year, but I can tell you, I told their mom and dad, I'm like, hey, there's no doubt in 10 years that this kid's going in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. So
it's great. Joe Smith was the MC of the evening,
man,
and I know I got to take a break, but I mean, he reminded everybody, you know, we have eight Olympians that are in the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame,
yep.
Super Bowl players, all these coaches with numerous accolades and everything. So it's pretty remarkable to think about all those different folks that came right out of here, Bloomington and Monroe County.
Pretty cool stuff. All right, let me see where we are in time, Jimmy, and I'm going to just say this. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Lance Like and the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my buddy Lance at 812-323-8300. And the best auctioneer in the business, Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. I got a lot of stuff coming up, but let me talk about the market real quick, and I won't get into some major details, but we're kind of in that bad news, good news thing, right? On the economic front, last week's news was generally disappointing. The upbeat first quarter GDP report was a little discouraging, and several Fed officials gave more hawkish updates. In the beige book, I'm not going to go into why they call it the beige book, revealed modest economic growth nationwide, yet despite a drumbeat of bad news, stocks were pretty resilient and closed only slightly lower for that holiday shortened week. Had a great Memorial Day weekend. And then today on Thursday, jobless claims came in and labor costs went down a little bit. We had a little bit of a rise in our trade deficit. We've had ADP reports this week, vehicle sales reports. I'll tell you, a lot of people aren't buying used cars, man. I mean, the prices are high, interest rates are high. We had manufacturing index come out. We had construction spending coming out. So this has been a pretty heavy week. And when I checked the market before I took off, it wasn't that much to report on. So we've got a lot of stuff going on, more to report on later. And lastly, before we take a break, I'm excited because, of course, you know, we got a lot of stuff going on from a tax perspective. But coming soon, the Super Bowl of Tax. I've got a webinar on June 13th on the tax reform priorities and politics. Of course, I just came out of the Ed Slot meeting and got a good glimpse into what is maybe going to happen after the tax code resets back to where it was at the end of 2025, that fiscal cliff they're calling it, Super Bowl of Tax. They're kind of debating the politics of tax policy ahead of that tax cliff drop-off. We're going to talk about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that expiring, of course, at the end of 2025. The odds of a Senate approving a bipartisan House bill passed in here in 2024. The impact, of course, of the presidential and congressional elections. And what are the likely revenue raisers? I'm excited about that. June 13th. I'm here on our gym, June 13th.
I believe so, yeah.
Good. Because I'm all registered for it, ready to rock and roll. And any information I get, I will be bringing it to you. All right, let's take a long break. We'll be back with the question and answer show. I love the Q&A show. Number one, because if you have a question, more than likely others have questions as well. So we try to pick out some of the greatest and best ones we've had. All the advisors participate. Again, throwing them out. And then we're like, yes, that's a good one. So, again, I haven't reviewed them all, but that's okay. We'll wing it from here. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, Monday after work, I'm driving up to Erie, up to Toledo to go fishing on Erie on Tuesday, be back on Tuesday night. only to have an awesome rest of the week. And then on Saturday, Father's Day weekend, leaving for the Gulf of Mexico. And I've done that the last 5 years, Jim. And we'll be fishing on Sunday and Monday, come home Tuesday.
Is that a Father's Day like you and your dad?
Well, that's a great question. The old man is not going. But, you know, he and I were just in Canada
right.
a couple weeks ago. My son, who now works at Royal on the East Side as a certified, he's a certified Subaru guy. And by the way, loving it. And he cannot go because of work obligations.
Uh-huh.
The car business is tough, man. I mean, I love it that he's working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. But I don't know. I saw him last night. He's still. I actually had his yard mowed for him because poor kid. I mean, can't catch a break. But anyway. Yeah, so it's just going to be me and my friends and their sons.
Oh, okay.
So there's nobody.
That's fair.
It's all right. It'll be just fine.
It's a good time.
So anyway, and then before you know it, 4th of July will be here.
Yeah.
Are you doing the parade again?
I am doing the parade with Mr. Spoonmore from the Bloomington
Sweet.
Chamber of Commerce.
They
yeah.
guys will be a great duo.
Yep. He jumped in last year, and it took him about 3 minutes to get the groove, and away we went. So,
Yeah.
And they're still accepting applications for floats. I think they go through the end of next week. So if you've got a business out there and want to participate,
we'll be there. Is it on Friday?
It'll be no, it's on the 4th. It'll be on Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. I'm sorry. Thursday the 4th.
Yep.
Yeah. Because
on
I
the
gotcha.
Day.
I gotcha. Well, great. And that's going to be a fantastic weekend. It kind of turns it into an extra long weekend because a lot of people, you know, we'll take off probably Friday. Jim's off Friday.
I took off Friday.
I think our office is closed at noon. I don't know. Dan's pretty tough.
You got to work with Dan on that one.
I stay out of that. I like to be the good guy all
you
the
do.
Time.
You
and
do.
Just kind of let other people deal with the tough decisions. Close, don't close, all that. All right, Jimmy, it's question and answer show. Let's kick it off.
All right. Well, the first one here, I guess people are finishing up their spring cleaning. Question is, do I still need to save all the medical and donation receipts for my taxes?
You know, that's a good question because less than like 14% of Americans now itemize their deductions, and that's the only reason that you would need to keep those. You know, if you're married, filing joint, you almost get $30,000 of deductions. So if all of your deductions don't add up to that, there's no reason to keep them all. One technique, though, is bunching your deductions. So like, for instance, if you want to give, you know, in December for the next year, you may have a lot of charitable contributions. As far as medical goes, you know, first you have to have a lot of medical expenses because it has to go over 7.5% of your adjusted gross income before you can even deduct anything. So maybe it did, maybe it doesn't. Most people it does not. So if you plan to deduct it, meaning you're going to be over your standard deduction, yes, keep them until the expiration of those audits come around, which is about 2 years.
All right. This one is a very, very broad one.
I took my glasses off because I don't have any reason to read anything. This is totally me and Jim
just hanging out. We're going to Wee Willie South after this.
I love that.
If I want to leave money to a charity when I pass away, what is the best way to do that?
You know,
this is way open-ended.
That's awesome because I've been doing a lot on this lately. In fact, some charities have had me do some videos. So, yeah, there's money that you want to give when you're living and money that you give when you're gone. So let me start off with this. Let's say that you have highly appreciated assets and you're living. You want to give those things to the charity because they pay no tax. Or even if you're giving it to people, if you have kids or grandkids and you have stock that's highly appreciated or whatever, give it to them. They take over your basis. They pay tax on the gain, and you don't pay tax, and they still get the benefit of the gift, and you get the benefit of giving. If you're over 70.5, give it from the IRA, qualified charitable distributions. When you're gone, what you don't want to do is you don't want to give Roth money. You don't want to give life insurance money. You don't want to give money that's already been taxed or gets a stepped up cost basis like a piece of real estate or in stock in an individual account or joint account. You want to give IRA money. So I tell people, take the charities out of your will because the will does not dictate what happens to your retirement accounts. Anything that has a beneficiary form, that's the will of the money. So if you say leave money to the Boys and Girls Club, CASA, you know, all the organizations that I'm part of, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, leave it from an IRA. That's the best way. It's super easy. Just change your beneficiary form. Put them on for a percent of some type and go on from there and take them out of your will because you want the money that goes through your will to go to people. because of the tax ramifications.
So do you find that most people put a percentage that they say they want to give 10% here, 10% there, as opposed to I want to give 5,000 here, no, or 500
yeah,
or whatever?
More of it's dollar amounts, and that's probably the tricky part. So what I would do is, let's say you had $1 million, mm-hmm. and you wanted to give $10,000 or whatever, to 10, let's say $100,000 to charity when you go. I would peel the $100,000 off of it as its own IRA, mm-hmm. list the 5 or 10 charities that you want on that IRA, and just leave it alone. And then maybe every year or two, maybe, you know, kind of monitor the balance and see if it's still okay. And then if it's not, just move it over to your other IRA.
Okay, that's fair. Next question. This one came in from somebody who is moving to Bloomington and found our website. I have a 24-year-old daughter who has graduated from college and is living with my wife and me due to the housing market and job challenges. Is there anything we should do or that our daughter should do during this time that could benefit us financially? She's paying us a monthly rent and handles her own bills, but maybe there's something else to consider.
Huh. For them or for the daughter?
I think it's for either one.
Okay. Well, I mean, one, if they're paying more than half of her support still, even if she's graduated, she could conceivably be a dependent still, mm-hmm. and that could be a benefit to her. You know, Will's 23, and he lives on his own, and we certainly have been providing more than half of his support, but it made more sense because we weren't getting any real benefit for him being our dependent to let him fly on his own, you know, on his own plane, and he did, and it worked out better overall. So I think just a quick analysis, whether if she doesn't have a job, I don't know that there's anything that, I don't know where she's getting the money to pay the rent. So I don't know. That's a great question.
I think she's working based on the email exchange, but because of just market and everything, not able to go out and live
working,
on her independently.
Yeah, if she's working, I mean, and she has that extra money and they don't really care to get the rent from her, I would ask her to reposition that to a Roth IRA. You know, you can put up to 100% of your earned income up to the annual maximum limit into a Roth, and that's what I would propose.
Okay. Good deal.
I wish I knew more about that situation, and I probably will. Are they coming in to see us?
We're working on it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yep, they're travelers, but they're working on it, so yeah.
Got it.
One more?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, so this one is an IRA question. Can an individual who's using the age 55 exception for the 10% early distribution penalty roll over a part of a 403B account to an IRA and leave a portion in the 403B to take penalty-free withdrawals?
Yes, but let's take a break. I'll come back. I got a lot more to say about
that. That's why I wanted to
say. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. It is the question and answer show. Jim Emmon Jr. is in the house, and Jimmy is posing these questions. And Jim, since we took a break, and those that weren't patient enough to stick around, or those that just jumped in on the show,
absolutely,
here in midstream, what was the question again?
So it's a little meaty. Can an individual who's using the age 55 exception to the 10% early distribution penalty roll over a portion or roll over a part of a 403B account to an IRA and leave a portion in the 403B to take penalty-free withdrawals?
Okay, let's first talk about the rule of 55 because that's important. Mm-hmm. So if you terminate employment in the year you turn 55 from the employer that the plan is with, you can access those monies without a penalty. If you roll them into an IRA, now you're subject to the age 59 and a half. And if you took it out early, you'd pay a 10% penalty. So it has to be in the plan of the company or business that you terminated from. So that's the rule of 55. Really important. The main part of the question is, yes, we do it all the time. So I just had a person who retired from the federal government, mm-hmm. and they had TSP. They're 57 years old. So we determine what money he might need or they might need between 57 and 59 and a half. And we said, let's leave that in the TSP and roll everything else out to an IRA. And that's what we did. So we left about $100,000 in the TSP just in case they needed money, and about a year into it now, and they don't need any money, and we've actually done another little rollover to the IRA, leaving enough money in the G fund, the fixed account, to make sure that it was there if they needed it. So yeah, it's a very common use thing. You know, the other thing about if you can roll money in to a plan. That's one we've used before. You haven't been with the job very long. You're 56, 57. You've got 50 grand in the 401k. You've got $1 million in your IRA, whatever. You can roll money into the 401k plan. Doesn't matter where the money came from. Terminate service, access it without a penalty. There's always an end around in my world.
Okay. All right.
Legal end arounds. All right, let's move on.
Another IRA question, and this actually came from a couple different sources, the general idea. Excuse me. I know you can name a trust as a beneficiary in an IRA, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering if there would be a downside to doing that.
There used to be a big downside. Back when the stretch IRA was available for people. So, you know, you passed away, you leave it to a person, they have a birthday and a pulse, they could then stretch it out over their lifetime. Well, then if you leave it to a trust, unless it was what they call a real see-through trust where I could clearly identify who the beneficiary was, then you could still set up a trust-owned IRA and still get the stretch. But see, the stretch is gone now. So for most people, the money has to be out within 10 years. So the only reason to maybe leave it to a trust is if you're trying to control how the money's spent. If it's in a trust and you die, it goes to a trust. It's going to be a trust that benefits somebody. And again, the money would have to come out if the person had already started minimum distributions. They have to keep doing minimum distributions, and it all has to be out in 10 years. But the money could still stay in the trust. In that way, the trust would pay tax. Usually what they do is they kick some money out to the beneficiary, K-1 them, because trust tax rates are a lot higher than individual tax rates, or at least they get higher quicker. So, you know, my opinion, I mean, it just depends. Most people still leave them to individuals, but there are reasons to leave it to a trust-owned IRA as well.
Okay. Talking about beneficiaries, so this one came...
But you have to have someone run the trust. That's one of the hardest things. You have to pick a trustee. So usually you're your own trustee. You know, you control your own money. But when you die, it becomes irrevocable, and you have to have a trustee. So a lot of times someone will pick a relative to do it, or a friend, or a custodian like a bank or whatever. But most banks don't want to mess with handling a trust unless it's at least $1 million, at least. So to find someone to handle a trust under $1 million is kind of complicated. We actually have someone will do that for as little as $500,000. And the question is why? Well, they charge a fee, and it's just as hard to run a trust for $500,000 as it is $10 million. So anyway, that's just another side point.
Well, that's another question that's on here on down the page about a couple who have two adult children, and one child lives extremely far away. Mm-hmm. The other one is closer, and the closer one physically is just not interested, not capable of handling mom and dad's finances if something happens to them. So they're kind of curious, what do people do if there is nobody out there that's like the immediate family member, and they're getting up in years and may need some kind of financial representative, health representative, et cetera?
Sure. Well, there doesn't have to be a family member. I mean, maybe it could be someone from your church, or it could be, you know, like I said, it could be a institution, you know. But I kind of like when in most of the trust people, they have feelings, right? They understand situations, but they're there to make a, you know, good decision for the beneficiary to maintain the integrity of the trust. But you can pick anybody you want, and you can change it anytime you want, you know, as long as you're still around. So like in my situation, you know, for years with Will, now 23, but, you know, we still have money that if something happened to both of us, it wouldn't all lay in his lap. It would be, you know, divvied out over time. But, you know, there was a time where my dad was going to be the trustee. My brother Dan would handle the money, the guardian of Will, and my dad would be the trustee. And then we moved that to where Dan would be the trustee. There isn't not going to be a guardian for Will. He's 23. So, you know, times change. People, you know, just kind of get your head up, look around, see who else is in your trusted world and make it that person. And then that person can always assign another trustee if they choose not to do it or can't do it.
So I was getting ready to say, if you have somebody who is appointed the trustee and then the time comes when that individual needs to do it and they're incapable,
right,
does it fall to that trustee to find a replacement, or does it go back to the original folks and they have to do it? I mean, it could get meaty, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it is good to have backups
yeah.
too. So you can write that stuff in, or you can just have a default that says, if this person can't do it and the second person can't do it or is unwilling to do it, then it would fall onto some kind of an institution. And there are people out there that are accredited that are not, you know, institutions necessarily, just people that will provide that service out there. And okay. we have a couple of those as well.
All righty. You want to take a break?
Now let's do one more.
All righty. Let's see here. Should I put my name on my mom's checking account or on her house?
Yeah. Well, so this
another
is,
meaty one.
Yeah, yeah. So we may not answer it all in this segment. But, you know, I always ask that question, what are you trying to accomplish? And they're like, well, you know, something happens to me, meaning die.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be able to pay my bills. Okay, well, that's legitimate, you know, but is that the only reason? Well, you know, they'll go into, well, you know, well, you can handle while you're living, they can be a power of attorney and do all the things that you want them to do. They can be a signer on your account without being owner of your account.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be a preference of mine for the purpose of while I'm still living. And then when I'm gone, you know, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, typically accounts are frozen up for just a period of time. Well, you worked in banking, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
But they can get opened up pretty quickly for the executor mm-hmm. to start paying, you know, the utility bills, the tax bills and all that.
Right.
So I don't like it. I mean, unless I just don't like it because I think a lot of people think, well, I'll put them on there in case I go into a nursing home. Well, that doesn't really work too well because they look for the source of funds. Like, where'd the money come from? Was it all mom and then you just got added? Well, then you have to think about, well, if it is half mine, was it more than the annual exclusion amount? And I'd have to file a gift tax return. So I don't like it. I think it's better that you can do it through other legal processes because think about it this way. I was talking to a lady, I believe it was this week, and her son was on her accounts as a joint owner. Now, it was the only son. And I just asked her, I said, how's your relationship with your daughter-in-law? And she said, it's really great. And I said, okay, well, if it ever appears to start to get rocky, you might want to take him off your account because mm-hmm. that could conceivably be yep. a marital asset. And you've put him on there, house, whatever. And if they went through a divorce, that could particularly maybe be in jeopardy. So I always think I was just asked why, you know, yeah. why do you want to do this? And usually they don't even know why. Normally it's because they've heard that maybe it's a good idea.
One other thing I will add, because I had this experience in the bank, in banking, was that a child was trying to get on the parents' account. And what was found out later was that the child had all these bills that people were coming after and the creditors were you know, on the hunt.
Another thing,
they want to get on mom's account and suddenly mom's wiped out.
Right.
And that's, you love your kid, but if there's something like that, you got to watch out for yourself too.
So run their credit report before you do it.
Annualcreditreport.com.
Yeah. You know, interesting, like we were working on a wire today, right? And,
yep.
And
yeah.
you and Jared were in there working. You spent, I mean, way too much time on yeah. it, but you had to because, you know, I wired some money this week for a closing. This person was paying off their house. We were wiring money, and I mean, it was sketchy as heck. And finally, yeah. we threw the talent, so we're not going to wire the money because we can't verify the fact that it's going to actually end up where it's supposed to go and be credited to pay off this house. So you guys, I think, overnighted a check to the
mortgage
company.
That's what Jared ended up doing. Yeah. If you ever get involved in wires, just know that once that money leaves your bank, it's gone.
It's hard.
So if you don't get it to the right spot, it's your fault at that point. So
kind of like Venmo.
You're signing off.
Kind of like Venmo.
You got right? it.
My wife, we Venmoed someone who mowed my son's grass, and I've never met him before, but I was like, can we Venmo you? Uh-huh. I don't have Venmo. I've determined my wife may have that. She may be independently wealthy with her Venmo account because any time and every time someone owes me money, whether it's for Indianapolis 500 tickets, whatever it is, yeah. I'm like, well, just Venmo my wife, and sometimes it's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, and I'm like, where's all this money go? So finally, I'm like, can you Venmo this guy $100? I'm finally getting some of the money
back. Right, get some payback.
I know. How do y'all find that out, Jim? How much money she has in her Venmo account?
I may need to become her friend on Venmo and see what I can do.
Yeah, right. But to that point, she said, is his wife's name this? And I said, I don't know. So I texted him. He said, yep, that's her name. And it went away, and he said, got it. And I'm like, cool. So Venmo is pretty cool.
It is, but we're doing our 30-year class reunion at the end of this month, and I can't believe the number of 47, 48-year-olds who don't have Venmo to pay their $25 registration fee.
If they're married, their wife has Venmo.
Well, that's what we're digging into.
All right, let's take a break. Yep. When we come back, more questions, more answers. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everybody. Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Inman Jr. is with me. We're doing the question and answer show. So, Jimmy, let's roll on.
All right. We got two questions here about underage accounts. The first one is, I opened a 529 college plan for my son when he was born 17 years ago. He is not going to college and is not going to be accessing the funds. Can I convert to a Roth for myself?
No, the answer is no. The answer is it has to be the beneficiary that has to be on there for 15 years under the Secure Act 2.0, and the son would have to have earned income and up to the limit, the annual limit, which is $7,000 per year, he could roll it into a Roth. Now, the question has become, like, what about the tax credits? You know, in Indiana, you get a tax credit when you make a contribution. And what's goofy is, like, anybody, and this is what's screwy, you could make a contribution to my son's 529 and you get a tax credit, right? I've made contributions to kids' accounts who I have no relation to, and I've received a tax credit. Well, if they move it to a Roth, supposedly we have to recapture the credits. It's like, who in the heck's going to track this stuff?
Yeah,
it's in the very small print of the Indiana form when you want to roll it to a Roth. So I'm just telling people, hold tight. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think they have any possible way. It'd have to be like, I mean, my son would roll it to a Roth, and then he'd have to determine who put money into it. How would that ever happen? So we have rules, and then we have practicality. And I always tell people, here's the rules, but in practicality, here's what my experience has been. So the answer is he cannot. Now, the question is, if he changed the beneficiary to himself and held it another 15 years, the answer is yes.
Okay.
So why not?
So if he had his child at 30 years old and the son's
47.
Now 17 and, 47, yeah. Then he could potentially...
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, I took my money out and bought a bass boat for Will. I mean, but a good chunk of it, and had to recapture some credits there. But that was before this rule happened, because I'm 54. I would change it to myself, hang on to it, and 15 years later, boom, move it over to Roth. But I have to be... It is up to the annual limit. But by that time, with inflation increases, heck, it could be, be $35,000.
That's
who knows?
True.
I doubt
That's
it.
True. This one, I didn't get the exact question because we a couple of different
this is just a pet peeve. Why limit what you can put into a retirement account? You know what I mean? Because it's like, we want to, and I understand, like, you're really rich and you want to put all this money away tax-free. I get that part. But, we have some everyday normal working people that really would like to put more into an IRA. Mm-hmm. They don't have access to a 401k. They don't have access to, a company plan. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, you can only put $7,000 in, that's it. Or I can only put $8,000 for a catch-up, that's it. Well, I need to put more money away. That's a bad, 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 bad legislation.
Who makes that determination?
Idiots.
Okay, that's fair.
All right, let's move
elected
on.
Officials.
Elected officials. Not all of them are idiots.
So this was kind teasing. Of in the group discussion on Tuesday at the advisor meeting, talking about claiming your Social Security benefits on an ex-spouse and looking at the options and everything. And you may know a little bit more detail about how much and what the benefits are and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Social Security a lot over the last month. I had Mary Beth replay, I think, 2 weeks ago?
A couple weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, and, so if you were married for 10 years and divorced, you are eligible for ex-spousal benefits when you get to full retirement age. Well, actually, not even full retirement age, when you become at least 62. And here's the deal. Like, it used to be, not now, that you could go ahead and claim, get 50% of what your ex-spouse's benefit would be, delay yours to 70 and flip over. But most everyone who's eligible for that has already hit 70. So that rule is pretty much off the table, unless you really don't have a very big benefit. If you don't have a very large benefit, you still are eligible for half of your ex-spouse's benefit and doesn't affect their benefit at all. They're eligible for yours. But your benefit must be less than half of what their benefit would be. So that would mean you don't have much of an earnings record at all. So that's the answer to that.
Okay. Another question here, talking about...
I would say, you know what, if you've been married for 10 years and divorced and you're wondering, that's what you need to reach out to somebody. Quit trying to figure this stuff out on your own. You know, death is different than divorce. So it's just complex. If you are of that age, you should be working with someone that knows this stuff.
Okay. One other general question was about gifting money and the tax limitations that come with gifting money.
All right, let's take a break. How many more segments do we have?
I think we've got one or two. Two more.
Two
so
more.
We got a couple more questions.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll answer that one because that one's got some meat on the bone as well. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Inman Jr. is alongside me riding shotgun, if we were driving in Britain, because he's on my left side, on my right side. That's why we need a video. We need to be on YouTube or something.
You know, I'm kind of surprised we haven't done at least one of those, just a set up the camera and do a recording of Your Money with David Hayes just to see.
So people
can see the secret behind the sauce.
Yeah, I mean, maybe disappointed, but here's the thing. We'd have to have a more cleaned up studio.
Maybe.
It looks like, as my famous term is, a raccoon in a trash can just ran through here. So we would have to have a cleaner studio. Could you see those YouTube, the way that people do podcasts and radio?
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's pretty cool.
But you kind of wonder also if they aren't like AI-ing it and that's really not even their desk or whatever. I mean,
I'm good with whatever. Okay. Makes it look good. Let's try it sometime.
We might have to do that.
David McKnight and I did a show and we had it on YouTube or we Zoom or whatever. And then he put it on his YouTube channel. If you ever want to check it out, it's pretty cool. Go to DavidMcKnight.com or Power Zero and you can watch our interview. It's pretty good.
Goodness.
He broke it up into two segments and yeah, pretty good stuff. All right, Jimmy, question
and
answer.
Question we got to you right before the break is talking about gifting money and the tax limitation. So is the amount changed for 2024?
It's $18,000, so you can give $18,000 of cash or any property to anybody you want without filing a gift tax return. What does that mean? Well, you have a $13.6 million lifetime exclusion amount, so if you give more than $18,000, all you have to say is, on this form, it's pretty simple, too. I filled one out for someone this year who gave their house to their son that they gave. You know, they paid $130,000 for it. It was worth $250,000. So, you know, $120,000 more. So I took the $120,000 minus the $18,000. And we said, okay, we no longer have $13.6 million. We now have 13 point blah, blah, blah left over. So it's no big deal. But you can, you know, if you have a married, like if you have a son and a daughter-in-law, you can give 18 and 18, not to file it. But don't worry about that. I mean, filing the return is no big deal at all. So I don't know why people get so hung up on it. I think it's just lack of education.
Does it have to be cash?
No. No. A house, cars, whatever.
But it can't be an investment.
It can be anything.
It can? Okay.
Anything. Anything. You can give anything away. Anything.
Okay.
I mean, that has value.
Yep. Fair enough. All right, one last question here from Jenny, wanting to know about putting a charity as a beneficiary on her TOD, transfer on death account.
Bad idea. Going back to the beginning, why? Give those to people because that's your individual account. You're going to get a stepped up cost basis when someone inherits that. Put the IRA, put them on the IRA. And I know exactly the situation. Sycamore Land Trust, great organization. I mean, Ducks Unlimited. I have a lot of organizations that I had originally thought I want to give $5,000 to when I go.
Yeah.
And I finally, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I'm like, that's stupid. I'm going to give it to my IRA. So I have a deferred compensation plan that has charities listed on there as percentages. And then I basically, once a year, when we do kind of our annual financial statement, say, yeah, I'm cool with that. Or lower the percentage. You don't have to sweep the money out. Like, it was, like, I have Boys and Girls Club on as 10% of that account. Well, if it went to an amount that I didn't feel like I wanted to give that much, I just change the percentage. I mean, it's so easy. It takes you, I mean, takes us like 2 minutes to do it. And that way you don't have to call the lawyer. You don't have to go through, you know, you'll change your will. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't do it. And leave the IRA money.
In this age of being able to access your accounts online, can somebody log into an account and do that themselves?
So, So let's say you worked for IU and you have a Fidelity 403B or Cook or whoever. Mm-hmm. Go right online. Hospital, go right online. You change your beneficiary online. School systems, whoever it is, go online. Just change your beneficiary to that. Now, you want to be primary, not contingent, because contingent only comes into play if the primaries aren't around.
Okay.
So, like, I would leave Misty as my primary beneficiary, Will as my contingent beneficiary, but I want that charity to be a primary beneficiary. And the cool thing about IRAs, you don't have to have spousal consent. An ERISA plan, which is like 401ks and many 403bs, if you don't have your spouse listed as the 100% beneficiary, they have to say it's okay.
Mm. Good to know.
They have to say it's okay.
Okay.
All right, Jimmy.
Let's say okay.
You want to take a break?
Let's take a break. That's the wrap up of the questions.
All right. We'll come back, have fun for about 2 minutes. It's Your Money with David Ace. James?
Yes, sir.
I'm not so sure we shouldn't do Q&A like every week.
It's fun.
It goes fast. But I can tell you that it's probably a lot more interesting than me having Rod come on and talk for 20 minutes about what's going on in the markets, the economy. But
that's why variety is the spice of life. We provide all different kinds of things. So some people love the Rod commentary.
They do.
They call in.
They get on glass in the afternoon on Mondays and Fridays. No, I'm just teasing. I love having Rod on, but not every week. But, you know, I have him on a couple times a month for one segment. And usually I'm like, hey, I'll text you when I'm ready. And I text him when I'm ready, and he's good to go. And he's like the Energizer Bunny. You stick a quarter in him, and just go. Well, it's like Ed Slott when I have Ed on. I'm like, hey, Ed. I have this, hey, Ed, what's going on? Just shut up, sit back, drink my water, and listen.
That's life is good. Hey, if anybody wants to submit a question, go to cfci.us, click on Contact Us. We will get your question answered right away. Give us a day, obviously, to get through the system and everything, but we'll get that right away, and then we'll add it in.
Well, call us, too. I mean, I hear you back on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of times the questions lead to questions. So not always is it a yes or no. Yep. Like you heard today, I mean, there's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of angles. There's a lot of end arounds. There's just a lot of stuff sometimes that goes with a question. And, yeah, so call us, 812-334-3190. We've been the same number for nearly 30 years. So I don't think it's going to change anytime soon.
Speaking of nuance, who's coming in next week?
We have a complicated week next week, so let's just leave it at that.
Okay, that's fair.
We'll get it worked out. I'll be here.
Okay.
I'll be here. I'm here on Thursday.
No, I know. I was thinking of our colleague who might be coming in.
Oh, let's just leave it to a mystery at that point.
Let's leave it as a mystery.
All right, we're going to take the long break, folks. Have a great rest of the week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.